Добро пожаловать в Трансформаторную, подкаст о личностных и организационных изменениях. С вами Сергей Макаркин, agile-коуч, психолог и философ-любитель. В каждом эпизоде я делюсь идеями и инструментами, которые могут быть полезны в личностной и организационной трансформации. Всем привет! Сегодня у меня будет экспериментальный выпуск, и в этом выпуске я поделюсь с вами интервью с Патриси Конг. Она владелец продукта Enterprise решений в Scrum.org, и также она развивает фреймворк доказательный менеджмент, evidence-based management. И мне лично этот фреймворк особенно интересен тем, что он дает структуру, позволяющую принимать решения об изменениях и улучшениях в организации, опираясь на какие-то данные. И он пропагандирует целостный взгляд на организацию. В общем, услышите сами. Как вы, наверное, догадались, интервью будет на английском. Для тех, у кого с английским не так хорошо, как хотелось бы, на YouTube я выложил версию, в которой есть русские субтитры.
Okay, so good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Good evening, or it's probably good morning for you, Patricia, right? So today I want to start a sort of experiment, and I would like to make an interview with Patricia Kong. She is the product owner of Enterprise Solutions at Scrum.org. And she also has some background in organizational behavior and business background. And I've met Patricia when I became a part of professional Scrum trainers community at Scrum.org. And we were talking about the evidence-based management framework that she's actually helped to develop, or maybe will be more precise to say she's kind of leading the development of this framework. Welcome, Patricia. It's really nice to see you.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. I will try to speak slowly so that we can subtitle this.
Okay. Thank you very much. So before we get to the evidence-based management, could you please share story of, well, actually how you started working on this framework?
Sure. So I have, I've been at Scrum.org, which is the organization of Ken Traber, the co-creator of the Scrum framework, about six, seven years. And at that time, when I was joining, it was really for two reasons. Because one, Scrum.org is a mission-based company. So, you know, improving the profession of software delivery. And that was really, excuse me, compelling to me. But the other reason was because at that time he was developing something called the Continuous Improvement Framework, CIF. So that was a catchy name, but it was really about talking about how to use Scrum to improve the organization. So that at that time was almost too early. He'd been working on it for a while, but this is the idea of people thinking about transformation now. And that wasn't what he was trying to develop. He was trying to say, how do we iteratively try to improve an organization continuously? And there was a team working on that. And then what happened was there was a piece, because it was, like I said, a little bit early for the market. There was a piece that really stuck out was, okay, well, if we break down that conversation and say, if we're trying to improve the organization, or if we're trying to scale, right? Scaling was the big topic. How do we know that we're getting any better or what we're doing? So when we started to think about that, the notion of, well, we need to inspect and adapt what we do. And that was really how evidence-based management came to be. And evidence-based management, you and I have talked about this, is not really about the notion of the management framework. It's really based on evidence-based medicine. So how do we gather the information that will be helpful or important to us to make decisions, the best decisions that we can at that time to go forward, right? There's no guarantee for anything. And what is the most direct evidence that can show us that path, and how do we actually really use empiricism to try to improve where we are? But the whole notion of just measure and measure what's valuable and understand what success is for you and, you know, build off of that is really where EBM came from. And I've been working on it, since that time, but we actually had to put it on the shelf for Scrum.org because the scaling conversation was really big. So we said, okay, if you really want to talk about scaling, and maybe this is another time, another podcast, but let's talk about the smallest unit of scaling, which is around the team. What does that look like? And that's the Nexus framework, which we worked on 3 years ago, and now I'm back looking at evidence-based management to bring that to the community.
Okay, so you seem to be really passionate about this evidence-based management approach, which I really like a lot because this is, it's really cool when something drives a person the way this thing drives you, so I'm really glad that you have this passion. So, imagine if I was like a middle or top rank manager and I would approach you to ask you, could you explain me what is this evidence-based management framework in several minutes, 5 minutes or so?
Yeah, I probably wouldn't say it in 5 minutes. I would just say evidence-based management is really a framework for you to measure the value that you're achieving in your organization and show you and have you think about how you can improve. And that's really from a management and an executive level conversation. I think that's where it's important because EBM is not about, are you using, you know, an agile framework? Are you using Scrum? Are you using Waterfall? What are you using? My question is, you know, when you think about value, how do you know that you're achieving success and what can you do? So that's really what evidence-based management is. In itself, you know, to get into detail, it says we focus on, you know, the focus really is around four key value areas that make up EVM. And the first one is current value. So where are you now? How do you measure that? And the second one is unrealized value. Where do you want to be? Right? How would you start to think about that and explore that? And that's really about the market capability. And then there's two more, and this is about the organizational capability. And it's about what is your ability to innovate and what's your time to market? And so those are really, when you talk about those things, depending on who you're talking to and where the organization is, you know, it makes sense. Of course we want to figure that out, you know? Then the value question comes in. Well, what's value? You know?
Okay. So I was listening to a podcast, Coaching for Leaders, with Stacey Barr about the performance measurement, which is, well, at least sounds like some very closely related area. And, well, she shared a story about when she was just starting doing her measurement stuff. So it's like, she was working with the safety committee and preparing some reports for them. And she had a very good statistical background. She was a very skilled statistician. So she made some rigorous analysis. And what this analysis actually showed is that this safety committee was working 14 years, but their decisions had no impact on safety. So the safety was very stable throughout these years. And she brought this report to the meeting of this committee, and she was just like, you know, everybody were just treating her as if she was a newbie and didn't understand anything in safety. And what she actually, she felt very, very embarrassed. So it was a very kind of tough experience for her. And when she was thinking through this incident, what she came up with is that actually by bringing this report, she demonstrated to the head of this committee and to the members of the committee that they are just incompetent and they kind of that don't that their actions don't mean anything in this organization. And like I've seen this several times in my career as a manager and also as a consultant and coach, that when you propose people to measure something, especially if it's related to like the truly things that truly matter, people can be reluctant because it kind of makes them too transparent and vulnerable to kind of facing their own incompetence and maybe wrong decision making. So I know that it can be a tough question, but I'll try. So how would you avoid such a situation implementing evidence-based management if you were to lead this kind of thing, project?
Well, that's big. There's so much in there because there is the concept of, and I'll bring it back this way. It's kind of know your audience and know your goal. And when we have talked about, you know, EBM and evidence-based management and empiricism and some of our other conversations, we've always said, take the best information you have and take the information you have to make the best decision you can, right? That doesn't mean anything's true or not. We just have information. And statistically, we can look at a lot of information and a lot of data, and that's information, right? But there may be other things that we should be cognizant of that are not around. However, that being said, you know, systematically or when you have that information, you can look at a company. I was talking to another PST, Wojciech Woltek, and he was saying, you know, in systems thinking, you can take a look at an organization and say, hey, you know what, after analyzing all of this, you are an organization that is set up to make promises that you just break, right? Mm-hmm. So now we have to think about the audience and is that the message we want to send or do we care? And there's a lot of different ways that I've seen people use EBM, and this has happened. So I've seen people start using EBM, and then all of a sudden with that transparency and no action to follow up on that data and information, employees start to leave. They start to quit. I've seen, you know, people do all sorts of things where they said, you know what? We are grateful for that information and we're going to try to improve. So I think there is this notion of, I would say, start small. We're in an environment where if it's very threatening and it's not safe, you know, how are you going to best use that information to actually improve? And if it's just to show you that you suck, then mm-hmm. that's probably not the best way. Unless you want to be only working in environments that are going to be really receptive of this. Now we have to ask ourselves what kind of environments are really receptive to this. So there's just so much. That's why, I mean, there's so much in there. And it doesn't mean that it's not true. It's absolutely true. We've been in organizations where we said, let's start measuring things around your product delivery, right? And there's oftentimes the situation where, you know, manager thinks, this is really good, or I have all these ideas, these are fantastic, but they don't want to apply, like you said, any measurement to it, because if they see, for instance, that feature that we've invested hundreds of thousands of dollars, nobody's using it, that hurts their ego. There's a lot of times when we don't want to be accountable for those things, and that's what this is about. It's saying, can we get some transparency and accountability around this so that we can move forward? What do you think?
Well, I think it's probably about finding the right way to present this sort of information, because you can have the same message like just as a punch in the face, or you can just present it gently and as some sort of invitation to think and have a discussion. Mm-hmm. And I would probably say that the way how you approach this and how you bring it to the table is very, very important. And it takes, among kind of some practice, you need to have this conversation from the compassion stance. It's, by the way, it's probably related very much to this idea of servant leadership. It's not just pushing mm-hmm. people, but you want to make sure that they're able to accept this.
Right? Yeah. I don't want to say that she wasn't compassionate or wrong either. I agree with you. There may be a scenario where somebody, if there was an executive who asked her to do that and she said, here's the information, you know, that's very threatening. So what support and which stance did she come from? Or what was the goal? What was the reason? Is it just to share information? But that's really scary, right? Oh, for 14 years, we have not gotten any safer.
Yeah, yeah. And also, I would say that this takes some experience and some maturity as a person, because I remember myself doing this kind of the same type of mistakes when I was just starting my career as a manager, because I thought that, hey guys, I found out this is very important, and just let's take it, kind of suck it up and move forward. But later on, you understand that it doesn't work exactly like this. Mm-hmm. And I was interesting, recently in MIT Sloan Management Review, they published a research about the way how leadership changes with age. So they made a big survey of different managers of different ages. One of the most important things that they found out is that the managers who are in their 20s and 30s are very much focused on the tools, techniques, and processes. Mm-hmm. And the managers who are in their 40s, and especially who are in 50s, 60s, and even 70s, they're much, much more focused on the impact of their actions and inactions on the people. So it's less about instruments and more about people and relationships. And I think that this might be a sort of a good example of this thing, that when you are kind of just starting this, you are very much focused on the tools and techniques, and you can kind of, you can stop seeing people behind these processes.
Yeah. I mean, you know this better than I do with your background, but it's this notion of ownership and accountability, and the experience will come with that. But it's saying, hey, if we're talking about measurement, it goes, well, what are you measuring? Are those helpful? And when we don't, when we do it separately, just to point a finger, and we're mm-hmm. not saying, hey, you know what? You know, what can we do to get better? That's going to set up a barrier in the middle. And it's a me versus them, my information versus your information. You're junior. You don't understand the speciality that we have. And there is the notion of how the world has changed dramatically over 14 years. But I would say, John Rossman, he has a quote about this, but, you know, what value is there in doing an audit essentially over the last 14 years of how safe we are, rather than just saying, right now, where are we? What do we want to do? Let's move that there. And that's what I would say for EBM, if you're trying to measure, saying, where are we now? Right now, mm-hmm. where do we want to go? And let's go there together and do the best that we can, right? And what are the small steps that we can have? And that's when I'm trying to avoid situations like that, that's how we build cohesion. That's how we are collaborative together.
So it sounds like you are saying that it's better to focus on where we are and how we can move forward, rather than how we get here and who to blame, right?
Yeah, let's retrofit all the... Let's not retrofit all the measures that we have right now to the past. Let's just start right here.
Okay, I think that's a very good approach. And so if I was... if I wanted to introduce the evidence-based management into an organization that I'm working with, how would you recommend me to start? So what will be the kind of first steps or?
So I would say, first very tactical step would be to read the evidence-based management guide. That's on scrum.org. Yes.
Yeah.
But then my question would be, you know, who are you talking to, and figure out what value means to them in the organization. So what I'm usually trying to understand is, does that person understand what value is? Do they know what that vision is? Do they understand the goals of the company? And then, you know, what are they moving toward to try to achieve those goals, and how could we measure that? Now, that's very theoretical. What I would say is, generally, what I'm trying to understand is their cohesion between the message and the vision and the value of what we do versus, what are you suffering from now? What are you trying to do to improve that? So, for instance, we have a PST who's working in Brazil, and he's starting up a new office there. And they're a software company, and one of the things they start to do when they implemented EBM is that they understand that we're supposed to grow this office, right? That's their goal. We're growing this office. Okay. But what they know is that from their customer perspective, or from what they've been delivering, because they're trying to churn out code so quickly and different projects, they're known to have bad quality, standards. So what they started to do was just measure defects and technical debt. Now, what we have is you're really looking at now your ability to innovate, right? Because if you're obviously have bad quality, you need to rework it. Now you're not building on new innovative stuff. You're also upsetting your customer. So what they started to do was just measure right there. They understood that. And then what they found, and I said, okay, well, are we relating that back to anything in your current value? Are you relating that back to your customer satisfaction? And they said, yeah, we are actually. And while it can't be sure, you can start to see that those things are working together. So that's one example of where you might get started, is really understanding from those four key value areas what they're struggling with. And it's usually sometimes we don't know what our customers want. So that's the value thing. We are slow to innovate. Well, now we have to talk about what's holding that back, and our time to market is slow. So you can look at, for instance, value stream mapping and all those things. But what I want people to do is, if you're implementing this at your own company or with a client, is figure out, you know, what you're trying to affect and holistically relate that back to all those other areas, because you can see how, well, if we make our quality better, hopefully the customer satisfaction is getting better. Hopefully that's affecting our revenue a little bit more, right? We're making money, so we can do those things. And they did see that. Another example is a company that I was working with, they didn't know at all where to start. So they said, you know what, let's just capture employee satisfaction. We'll do this at the sprint retrospective, right? And I said, okay. So they did that, and they captured, well, what's going on? Well, we're always being slowed down. We have too many meetings, and I'm on a webinar talking with this gentleman about this. And he said, well, so we implemented Meetingless Monday. Okay, so then they implemented Meetingless Monday. Employee satisfaction is going up, but what they also notice is cycle time is getting better. And now management is getting really happy, and they're looking at that. So it's really looking at the pain and making sure that we cycle it back to these other areas.
So what I really like the word that you used in your answer, this holistic view, right? So what I really like about the evidence-based management is that it suggests you not just to fragmentary measure something, but rather to look at several points and try to create the bigger picture of how things are. Because what I've seen a couple of times, well, actually, I must confess that I've done it a couple of times throughout my career as manager, is you just start measuring something, and then you're too much focused on this thing. And while you may be even improving this particular metric, but if you step back and detach yourself from what's going on and try to kind of honestly discuss with yourself or with your team what's going on, you'll find out that this metric is actually getting better, but everything else is like going down the hill, and it's kind of not a good thing to do, right?
And I would say it also, so systematically, right, it can create a, let's say from an organization level, a mine versus yours. So we're not trying to improve anything towards some common goal, which is why I always talk about value, vision, what are the pillars that we have set up for success. But also we have to understand what we're measuring, because what we're paying attention toward is something that people can game. And if you're going to measure me on something, then I'm just going to pay attention to that one metric, right? So I talk about, and I was thinking about this actually recently, because I had a salespeople who were in an EBM workshop with me. And what we started talking about was, when I was a junior salesperson, is that we would be measured on activity. And activity for us meant how many phone calls we made. And I guess it's been long enough that I can say, well, obviously what that does is it just drives you to make quick phone calls, and you're not really trying to figure out what that outcome is, which is you're supposed to be making calls so that you can talk to customers to get more leads and sales opportunities to hit revenue, right? But what you do is you start picking up the phone and you call your mother, you call your uncle, you call your aunt. I call all my friends. I know all of their phone numbers, you know, just dialing. And actually, this is still going on. This consulting company told me that a great thing that to make phone calls is to call restaurants. So you're supposed to make 50 calls a day, and these are the kind of things. And that's the behavior you drive when you say you must make 50 calls a day. when you're measuring, you know, in our world, when you're saying you must have this velocity or you must, you know, this many lines of code.
Yeah, I saw this kind of code. So
yeah.
It can be really fun to look through this code when you kind of measure this kind of stuff. Well, what you said that a lot of times when organizations start to measure something, they're more focused on the process stuff, these sort of activity metrics. And well, that might make sense because usually it's much, much easier to measure the number of calls than to measure like the level of engagement with the customer or something like this. So other than this, when you have a discussion with the organization about the about what they measure or what they are going to measure, what kind of typical patterns you notice in the organizations, in their measurements?
You mean in their measurements?
Yeah.
Good question. So a couple things I would say is they're measuring what they can. The first part would be they're determining success by those things that they can measure. So for instance, they might be measuring a lot of things that are focused on activity and what we would say is output, a result of that activity. But to me, that doesn't help me determine if we're adding any value to the end user. So that's what I try to say. How can you figure out if you're doing that? What would you measure? And the question I ask is, what is the top goal? What is the top outcome that your user wants from your product, from your service? How would we measure that? What could we look at? Is that already something that's been instrumented into our product that might be there that we could, you know, start looking at? And then what activity and output does affect those things? Can we just start to pay attention to that and have some analysis and some data there and some trending over time? Because then you'll find correlations, right? You'll find correlations between the things that we're doing and sometimes user happiness and revenue, and that's another story I can share later. But the second part is really what I find is that companies are measuring a ton of things. So they'll say, we have OKRs, we have 2,000 metrics, and there's time and time again when I say what you measure is what you think is important. So when we look at all the things you measure, what is actually helpful? And you go, I don't know, right? So sometimes I think we're measuring too many things that we don't need to, or sometimes maybe that just belongs somewhere else, right? Because it's just noise. And if you just measure and you don't do anything with it, then that's useless, right? So those are really the two things. It's almost like a surplus of information. And then it's saying, are you measuring, I guess it's related, are you measuring things that are actually helpful to you? And so the thing that for me, I'm really passionate about around UVM and why we still pursue it at scrum.org is because when we start to measure in this sense of value and, you know, are we being successful? What we're doing is if we can coalesce the team and the organization around these things, now we're all kind of marching toward the same beat and we're all human and we have something that we can put together and in common and make people happy and that stuff. But also this notion that the people who are building that, we're not just incurring cost. And that's where IT has been for a while, right? It's just a cost center. And the moment that we can drive this into a value perspective, I think that changes things from a cost to asset base. So for me, the two important things around EVM really are, you know, focus on how are we creating value and that we're not just cost centers. And also this holistic view of when you do things, how can you think about systematically what's effective?
Mm-hmm. And I really like the way how you bring this idea of switching from the like cost center perspective to the something that brings value. And I think it's also very important for the people like who are working on this thing, because it's completely, it's totally different kind of type and level of motivation and engagement when you believe yourself to be just a cost of a company, or when you start to thinking, okay, this is how I bring the value to the customers and to the organization, and it gives you much more meaning and purpose and increased motivation also. And I think by doing this, it can also drive kind of good results.
Hopefully.
What do you think about it?
Hopefully, right? And this is about engagement and culture and all these things. I mean, culture can be an outcome of, you know, all these different things. If we can just start small and everybody understands, hopefully all these agile things that we talk about, you know, that this is the stuff, right? It's in, and the point is the reason, you know, when we talk about those things that you're talking about in terms of people motivation, that's one of the big differences of what does it feel like to work in a good team and what does it feel like to work on a team that sucks. And that, and it's for me, you know, and for a lot of other people and for people smarter than me, it's going to be, you know, do I have a clear understanding of the why, right? That's the next step. But it's important, I think, if we want to talk about being more agile, but in the sense it's also being agile doesn't matter. So people get really focused on how is my transformation going? I want to be agile. And the point is not to be agile. The point is to deliver more business value. And that's the whole thing around Scrum. It's the whole thing around what we're doing. And so we're saying, wait a second. So we try that, but we're not actually measuring that. So measurement is a key piece of it, but the empirical part of it is a really key piece of it too, right?
Yeah. I really like this idea of kind of focusing on what's important, not just on becoming, doing this agile transformation and creating 10 more agile teams, etc. So you've mentioned several times throughout this conversation that it might be a good idea to start with something small, like to measure just couple of things that are kind of easy to measure, but also have some impact on the value, right? Mm-hmm. So I know it's a kind of tough question and it's too general, but so if I was like a small organization without any specific measurements other than just accounting and this kind of stuff, what particular things would you recommend me to start measuring to if I was to implement this evidence-based management framework?
So it would be, again, let's say you're a small organization, you really don't know where to start. We would again say, hey, well, what are you struggling with? Is it that you're not innovating? Is it that you think your cycle time is really slow? Is it that your customers are unhappy? What is that one thing that you want to improve and start to focus on that and what can be affected? The side part, though, that we should keep in mind is, you know, what outcomes are we trying to achieve for the user? So if we're a small company and we're building, for instance, a billing product, right? So that's what one of the companies that we worked with, their healthcare SaaS, and I talk about them often, but their small product was just to be billing. Then you go, okay, well, who's your user? Who's your customer for them for that? And what do they care about? And so for this product, it was about doctors being able to bill, you know, for insurance to get reimbursed in the United States. And they said, okay, so what do they want? And what they want is they just want to be able to do that quickly and get paid as much money back, right? Very simple thing that they want. Okay, can you measure that? Oh, yes, we do. Okay, start looking at that. And now you have something that you can look at to see if, you know, you're trying to meet their needs more or not. You can start to look at that, which is very specific in my point of view of current value for that product. And then, of course, you can start to look at, you know, customer satisfaction or any of these things. But it's really about where your pain point is that you would start looking at these things. And then I think taking that one thing and then trying to run an experiment off of that is where we start to get empirical, right? So know where you are, what you're trying to improve, you know, make a hypothesis if you want, which is, you know, if I were going to do that, then I think this will happen, right? So we talk about this statistically, this will happen. This number, you know, will move and just use that. So figure out what number you're trying to move and measure that.
So it's about kind of finding out what do I mean by value and kind of seeing what sort of improvements would I like or changes would I like to see, and then trying to see what sort of metrics are somewhere on the intersection of these two, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it sounds at some points it can be really hard because you're saying, hey, what do they really want? But at some points it can actually be not that hard. Like I said, this one company, they knew their quality was low. So they said, mm-hmm. we're going to measure quality. Mm-hmm. Here are the mm-hmm. things that we're going to use to measure quality. We're going to measure cycle time. We're going to measure defect density. We're going to measure all these things. But now let's not forget, let's not just measure that in isolation, because we could have the best code in the world, but nobody cares about it. So now mm-hmm. we have to relate that back to something else, which is the actual user, the actual people who are paying for this service.
Yeah. And I also, what I liked about the approach that you described is that you're focusing on not just starting to measure, but making the measurement itself as an experiment. Mm-hmm. Because first, we want to be empirical. And second is, sometimes just by measuring something, you can already start influencing it, and you would probably, at least I would like to know how I'm influencing things just by observing, right? This kind of observer effect and mm-hmm. things that have been documented in some of the research in like yeah. the 20th century, right?
In English, we have this saying, don't try to boil the ocean. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of that mentality too, right? Just take it as an experiment. And a lot of what some other people might do is they think about, okay, well, we're, you know, we have our product backlog and we have these things that we want to deliver. Okay, well, how will we know, even just a small activity at the team level, is how will we know that we think this will deliver value to our customer? Or mm-hmm. what do we think this will do to the product? And start mm-hmm. measuring those kind of things, right? So there's a lot of different ways to think about it. And also, if I'm a product owner, do I want to be measuring the usage? Do I want to be thinking, do I want to understand, what revenue my product is getting? What drives that up? What drives that down? Does that have anything to do with innovation? There's tons of examples of how when you get that visibility, now you can have a great conversation with management. Ravi Verma, who's also a professional Scrum trainer, he had this dashboard that he was able to develop with a customer, and they have that where he was just saying, okay, let's just measure revenue, and they would notice dips. And every time they noticed this dip, they said, what's going on? And they started looking at, all their other internal measures. And what they noticed was that they had augmented staff, so let's say consultants, and mm-hmm. every time revenue went up, they fire all the consultants or the augmented staff. And then it'll go down, right? Your ability to innovate goes down. Uh-huh. That's funny because people aren't building. So now we say, okay, we have some information. Let's have a conversation. And what they figured out was, you know what we should be doing? We should be looking at if we're taking on too much stuff. Because if we're trying to save money, which is probably why we're, letting people go, then what else can we do with what we have? Maybe we just need to reduce the amount of work that we do.
Mm-hmm. So, well, I really enjoyed the conversations with you, but I also want to respect your time and to keep it within a time box. So if I would try to kind of summarize the key messages of the discussion, it seems to me that it will be around kind of focusing on value and creating the foundation for empiricism, this inspection, transparency, inspection, and adaptation. And the EBM framework is something that allows us to create more transparency and provide us tools for the inspection so that we could adopt and kind of move towards getting more value to our customers, to company and society in general. Does it sound like more
sounds
or less
great.
Correct?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Yes. And I would ask that people start thinking about, we talk about user outcomes and company impact. Mm-hmm. When we're doing things, how do we relate that back to those things, right? That's the value conversation. Mm-hmm. So it's very mm-hmm. tangible. If we're gonna be doing something, some activity, and we have different outputs, how does that relate back to the reason why we're doing it for the company and for a customer? And that's really when you hear us talk a lot about outcomes and stuff. The thing is that what people miss is that we talk a lot about these outcomes. And what I'm starting to think about is this notion that we actually have to, we have outcome-based thinking, but we also have to have action-based thinking. So we know what we want, but how are we going to do it? And that's this notion of the experiments for me.
Yeah, so it's like keeping the balance between kind of creating a vision and doing actually some dirty work to get yourself to this vision, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're a dance teacher, so
yeah.
I want to do this, but you're saying, here's the things that we have to try to do to get there. And,
the small steps.
Figure out what works, yeah?
Okay, so to wrap it up, I hope that this conversation kind of ignited some interest in our listeners to about the evidence-based management framework. So what kind of first steps would you recommend to do for those who are interested in learning more about the evidence-based management and maybe trying to apply it in their organization? So you already mentioned just go to scrum.org and read the EBM guide, but what else?
I guess they could call you. The other thing is on the website is on the scrum.org website, there are some different case studies that they might be interested in, different conversations like this and podcasts and webinars. We have some very tangible things of, you know, how we think about measurements, what could look at. So that's all on the website. And after, if you feel like you need to gather all that information, again, it's really just get started. And when I say just get started, you know, it's about thinking about what's possible. So just get started. We always say that. Just get started, you know, with Scrum, with Nexus. Do the best you can. And when I say just get started, I mean think about the present. You know, don't try to boil the ocean and go back 14 years. Just start right now and think about where we can get better right now.
Okay. What I really like about this, what you said is, I like this idea of practice what you preach, right? So we have an evidence-based management framework, and here are the evidence that the evidence-based management framework actually works. And so we sort of using our own approach to test and to kind of prove that the thing works, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, so well, thank you very much for your time. I really enjoyed this conversation, and hopefully our listeners also will find it very interesting and valuable. So thank you so much, Patricia, and have a good time of the day, whatever it's for you. So.
Okay, thank you for having me. I always enjoy our conversations. We'll talk later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Надеюсь, вам понравился этот эпизод. Если вы хотите поделиться идеей, выразить свое мнение или задать вопрос, пишите на info@sergeymakarkin.ru. Вы можете также написать мне в Фейсбуке или в Твиттере. Я буду признателен, если вы оставите отзыв об этом подкасте на iTunes или Google Podcast. Пока-пока!